When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
Welcome in episode 99, the Hunjin Ryu episode of the podcast. BJ and Radio, Yaremchuk and Coombsy. That is right, Coombsy. Episode 99. Can't believe we're almost at 100.
And because we're not going to do like, who in sports history wore number 100 or 101? Because of course, no one yet has worn three-digit numbers, but I can restart again at one. And I can quiz you on players with those name, with those numbers. Now. What do you think?
That's a good use
of the time.
Study up. I'll get going on it.
Just start memorizing, guys.
Yeah. Episode 99 is brought to you by, ready for this, Coombsy?
Yes.
Montana's All You Can Eat Rib Fest is coming. Actually, it's here from July 19th until September 12th. Hashtag get Montana's messy, Coombsy. They have events across the country. And since this is an across the country kind of podcast, let me tell you about where Montana's is going to be stopping with their truck. Friday, August 5th, they are coming to Calgary, Sandy Beach Park. Saturday, August 6th, they are in Red Deer, Rotary Picnic Park. They also have stops in Vancouver, stops in Edmonton, Saskatoon as well. They are coming, Coombsy. Montana's Rib Fest is here, and we are excited to be partnering with them.
So what we're telling people is go to Montana's in person and eat the food. Don't order it and have it delivered to your house. We've pivoted completely, right?
No, we are actually still brought to you by DoorDash as people here the intro. So you can combine our two sponsors, actually. That's the beauty of it all. Not only can you order some delicious ribs from Montana's, but you can use DoorDash on the promo code BJNPODD, and you can just combine those two suckers. Although, if you go into Montana's, that's how you can get access to the all-you-can-eat ribs.
So how's about you go to Montana's and eat all you can eat ribs and then go home and order again from Montana's and eat it the following day because you enjoyed it so much. How about that? How about that for advertising, Tyler?
I see absolutely nothing wrong with that plan. Nothing wrong with that plan at all. All right. Jays making light work of the Detroit Tigers, taking 3 of 4 games. They are 8-2 now in their last 10. And actually, before we get into 3 up, 3 down, Coombsy, I would like to point out Jays 8-2 in their last 10. And those two losses are the only two games in which you have been in attendance for.
Yeah, it's true. We can accurately pinpoint who's at fault for those two losses in the past 10 games, and it's me. It was the second game of the St. Louis series with Gausman starting. That was a difficult one. They got torched by two 40-year-old dudes. That was weird. And then it was Alec Manoah against the Tigers, which you did not expect to be an L. I think if you were going to bet on one of the games in that series to wind up as a W, it would have been that. But I'm on a pretty significant in-person losing streak now. I'm pretty sure that since that opening day comeback game, I've gone to almost exclusively losses. So I think I'm just going to stop showing up this season.
So it's a good time for you to move across the country is what you're saying.
Perhaps.
All right. Let's dig into this series here against the Tigers. The Jays really did take care of business. So let's start with the 3 up and we will rewind this thing and go back to game one, where perhaps you mentioned the Manoah start is one that I was like, all right, this feels like a guaranteed win kind of day. It wasn't. The Yusei Kikuchi start, on the other hand, that felt like one that was maybe, you know, you could understand that they were going to lose one. That was probably the one you had circled, considering what we'd seen from Kikuchi, the fact he hadn't pitched in a while. And then the guy goes out there and pitches 5 innings, only allows 1 earned run, strikes out 5 as well. Like, they only had 3 base runners, I believe, in his 5 innings. Like, he was really solid in that game.
Yeah, there was a lot of skepticism because Kikuchi went down to Buffalo and his rehab started. It looked fine at a glance, but then you looked a bit more and you're like, well, you still walked a handful of guys. And it was like, well, did you actually pitch all that well? But he comes up and to his credit pitched significantly better. And when you look at it, all of his good starts this year have been starts in which he uses the fastball a lot more. That's when he's in the zone. That's when he's in control. And that's what we need to see from him the rest of the way. I mean, the expectations for Kikuchi aren't super high. It's not like you have to come in and, you know, toss seven innings and strike out 12 guys. You don't have to be an ace. All you have to do is clear five innings in all your starts and give the team a chance to win. It just can't be like what it was earlier in the season when he's pitching like two innings. But if we see anything near what, you know, Kikuchi did in that start the rest of the way, that's fantastic. That makes life a lot easier for the Jays at the deadline, because if he's pitching like that, then it's not exactly paramount that you have to go and get a starting pitcher.
Yeah, and I think there is some risk in maybe overreacting too much the positive side to one good Kikuchi start. I don't think they saw Yusei Kikuchi do what he did and then went, hey, called up Cincinnati and were like, hey, we're out on Castillo, by the way. We're not interested anymore. Like, that would be rather foolish. And I would imagine that's not how they're operating here. We're going to chat more deadline with Michael Bradburn in a second.
But you think if Kikuchi in that start came out and just completely laid an egg, then it was like, all right, we have to go out and get a starter. Like, I think that he at least made it so they're not desperate to do so, right?
Yeah. And maybe it even gives them the ability to give off the illusion that they're not desperate when negotiating some of these trades, right? Like, teams won't think they have Toronto and Ross Atkins backed into any sort of a corner. Castillo obviously going to Seattle in a pretty sizable deal. It's one that sets the market, yeah. I think, right? Like, I know we're getting a little sidetracked from three up, three down, but I think you can look at that and kind of go like, okay, that's the framework. If you're the Jays, in terms of the prospect capital you have to give up, if you want to get Frankie Montas or someone from Miami like Pablo Lopez, right?
Yeah, and that's why that's why ideally if Kikuchi does pitch well and you have all of your internal options working, it makes your life so much easier because it's so much less expensive to go and acquire relief pitching that if the Jays had to go and get a 4 or 5 starter or something like that, it's not going to cost the same that the Castillo deal did because he's not that kind of starter. But it just means you have less bullets in your gun to go and get, you know, a lefty bat or a reliever or something like that, which I think is also an important thing to focus on.
Yeah, 100%. Let's get to our second up here, and it's on the offensive side of things, where the standout performer for the Toronto Blue Jays was Matt Chapman, who finishes this 4-game series with 4 home runs. He is, I even heard Tigers catcher Tucker Barnhart talking about it after one of the games, and he was just like, you can't even like come up with a game plan to pitch around this guy right now because he's just hitting everything. And that's really how it feels for Matt Chapman. It was a slow start to the season for Chapman. I think it had a lot of people kind of raising their eyebrows and being like, really? Like, this is the guy we were all excited to see, you know, come into the Jays lineup. This was the big offseason acquisition for the order. And, you know, defensively, he was great. He has been great. He's never been poor defensively. Mark Shapiro, we even talked on a broadcast, I think it was against St. Louis, about how every game Shapiro watches and sees one or two things Chapman does that he goes, wow, that is a very difficult play. But now that the bat's coming around for Chapman, we're really starting to see a player that, you know, they're the player that Jays fans were excited about this winter.
Yeah, there was some pretty authentic skepticism as to what to expect from Matt Chapman, because even last year in Oakland, he produced the 716 OPS, which was the worst OPS of his career. And I mean, the comparison that we all made was when they got Josh Donaldson ahead of the 2015 season, he was coming off of kind of a mediocre year, but it wasn't quite that bad. So with Chapman, it was like, is this who this guy is now? Is he a 700s OPS hitter and a very good defender? Or is he going to bounce back to when he was a guy who finished 7th and 6th in MVP voting? And that's kind of what we're seeing now ever since the Jays ironically went on that trip to Oakland at the beginning of July. Chapman's just gone absolutely nuclear. He's gone 27 for 73 with 9 home runs, and his OPS is up to 1.247 in that stretch. And it's not just, I know it's just kind of seems like an arbitrary date point, but it just happens to coincide with when they did go on that trip to Oakland and he got that nice standing ovation from the 700 fans that were there. It just seemed that was like the switch that changed the season for him. And he just looks so much more dialed in at the plate.
Yeah. We talked about guys. I mean, Gurriel for that stretch there. And then he had by no means had a bad series. I'm obviously not saying that. I think he had a hit in every game, or at least he got on base in every single game. Gurriel for a stretch there was the hottest hitter in baseball, it seemed like, right? And now it feels like that's been passed on to Matt Chapman. But again, we're seeing instances where guys a little bit lower in the lineup in kind of that middle third to lower third kind of deal are starting to hit. And this team just really keeps rolling. Not that they had any sort of, you know, massive offensive explosion against the Detroit Tigers. Like, they didn't score more than 5 runs in any of the games, but they did what they needed to do to get the job done. And Chapman, obviously a big part of that, with some massive home runs. For our third up, and we actually might have a couple bonus ups, but Jose Berríos in the series finale. This guy goes 7 strong. I was a little bit surprised that they yanked him when they did, considering what his pitch count was at, especially when maybe I see both sides of it, but like a guy like Berríos, who has had a pretty up and down season, you would imagine they may have wanted, or I would have liked to see, I should say, him get an opportunity to go the distance and really have like a solid building block to continue off of for the rest of the second half of the season. They yank him after 7, though, and it's still an impressive start.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping they were going to let him go the entire way. I thought, you know, why not go for it? You have an off day coming up later, but it does kind of seem like, all right, this was very positive. Let's just put an end to this here and bring in the relievers. Yeah. They've been pitching quite well as well. But for Berríos, it was since that terrible Milwaukee start. It's been 6 starts now, 36 innings and a 3 ERA, and it's just night and day what he looks like compared to what he was at the beginning of the season. And now, actually, ironically, for the first time, he has an ERA under 5. Which is kind of funny to say. Jose Berríos strung together 6 good starts to bring his ERA under 5, but we're at a point now where it seems like, okay, he's worked through whatever was going on. He's remembered how to be the good starting pitcher he used to be. And that's huge, because that's desperately what they need down the stretch. Like, again, we talked about this with Kikuchi, but it's even more extreme with Berríos. They need him to be good. Not like with Kikuchi, it's okay, we need you to clear 5 innings and whatever happens, happens, because you can't burn the bullpen. With Berríos, it's like, all right, no, you're supposed to be one of the top end guys. You need to be putting up good starts. We need to be looking at your name on the calendar and thinking this is going to be a win because you are pitching. And that's where we're at now. Like, now when I see Berríos' name coming up, I'm thinking, yeah, that's a good thing. Whereas earlier in the season, it was kind of like, not really sure what we're going to get. But there's confidence there now.
Yeah, this team has a bunch of players hitting their stride. Like, I mean, just Chapman and Berríos, 2 guys we talked about early in the season, legitimate concern. And those were 2 guys who, with the Berríos extension and the big trade, had fans really excited over the winter. And at the beginning of the year, like, when things weren't going well, you kind of looked at those two as like, they could use more from them. And now they're getting that. It's interesting to look at the playoff picture in the American League. And of the, I guess you could say 10 teams that are in the race right now, with 3 division leaders, the 3 wildcard teams, and the 4 teams who are within 4 games of the final wildcard, only the Jays and the Chicago White Sox and the Houston Astros, only 3 of the 10 teams are above 500 in their last 10 games. It's weird how everyone is just sort of sputtering right now, or seemingly everyone's sputtering in that race. And the Jays are leading the pack with an 8-2 record in their last 10. They're starting to create some important distance here between themselves and a team like Cleveland, who's sitting just outside of the playoff picture. Our last up, though, our bonus up, I should say, the bullpen was solid. Jordan Romano was solid, though. 3 1/3. He picks up 3 saves. He gets 3 strikeouts as well. That's one area where every closer is going to have rough moments throughout the year, but Romano's just been, in my opinion, really consistent for them this year when he's not been overworked.
Yeah, that's really the key. And that's why it's so important for the Jays to go and upgrade the bullpen, so we don't have to see Romano come in and pitch every single game. Otherwise, you know, you're going to have those disaster outings. But now that he's been used more sparingly, the starting pitchers are going longer. There's more options at the bullpen that can pitch key innings, it seems. He's been more effective, and that's kind of the way it's going to be. But the other thing I wanted to bring up before we move on is the Derek Law contribution, because it was so jarring watching the Jays in 2022 just get dummied by Drew Hutchison. It was very nerve-wracking that they were bringing Derek Law into the game, and it was like, no, there's no way you can get shut down by these 2 guys back-to-back in the same game. So thank goodness that the bats did come through off of Derek Law, because that would have been terrible, terrible vibes.
Yeah, he only pitched the 1 inning, gave up a dinger, gave up 4 runs as well. Surprisingly, though, none of those went down as earned runs, which I always find interesting when the number's that high and the earned run column is still sitting at a 0. But yes, thankfully, Derek Law did not ruin any of the vibes in that series. For our down, nothing really to get into, considering, again, they took 3 out of 4. They took care of business. But a scary moment in the Manoah start, obviously him leaving after getting hit with that ball. It sounds like he's OK. So kind of, you know, exhale on that. But that's worrisome. Like, that's, again, one of those things, especially in baseball. one play can like really derail things. And when that ball hit Manoah, my first thought was like, oh, fuck, of course. Things had been going too good over the last couple of weeks for the Blue Jays. Of course, this is going to happen.
Yeah, this is one that you absolutely cannot navigate.
Yeah.
If he's the one who gets injured, then I don't know what to tell you, man. Like, I don't really see anybody stepping up and filling that role internally. You obviously can't get somebody that good externally from a different team unless, I don't know, like, who do you convince? Which team do you convince to trade their ace at this point? Or, like, is anybody even that good? Like, not much you can really do. So we just got to hope that this isn't a problem because, oof, that's one you can't dance around at all.
Yeah. But really, that was the only down part of that series. Again, Jays take 3 of 4. They're feeling pretty good here as we head into the deadline. I had a chance to catch up with Michael Bradburn from The Score. We're going to get to that in a second. But first, Coombsy, we are, you know, a little bit over 24 hours away from the MLB trade deadline. What are you expecting from the Jays here? Is it just kind of a couple of relievers? Do you think they get in on the starter market?
I don't know. It's hard to say. I kind of look back to the years they've been competitive and, you know, in 2016, it wasn't, you know, they weren't going to go all in because of what they had inherited. It was more of an under the radar deadline, getting kind of wacky names like BJ Upton, Scott Feldman. They got Jason Grilley way earlier on to fix the hole there. 2020 was really interesting. They kind of, it was Taiwan Walker was, they got from Seattle for Lord even knows who the prospect was, like literally nothing. They made the pretty big trade with the Dodgers for Stripling, but that was a guy that had multiple years of control. Then it was, of course, Robbie Ray as well. So, and then last year there was the huge trade for Jose Barrios. That's the biggest one they've done. I wouldn't expect anything of that size, like a Barrios deal, but I could see something more under the radar, like another Ross Stripling type thing where there's somebody with multiple years of control coming back that can kind of maybe fill the role that they think he might be leaving as a free agent this offseason. I think though that the priority will be relievers because those are also the cheapest to acquire. I don't think we're going to see the Jays trade their number one prospect, Moreno. Yeah. And that's why I just kind of don't really expect them to be involved in like these huge name trades, Soto, Ohtani, even if they're going to happen. I don't expect the Jays to be one of those teams this year because they've done it, you know, last year it was so much to give up. Like they, you know, had big trades in the offseason. Again, it's hard to see it happening again.
All right, let's bring in our friend Michael Bradburn from The Score to talk about not just what the Jays could do, but what could be going on all around baseball.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Very excited to welcome in Michael Bradburn from The Score. He is a Craig Kimbrel lover, which I've always appreciated. I love how hard you've ran with that bit and you have never let it go. It is one of my favorite things on baseball Twitter, I must say, Michael.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. It's getting harder to hack because now Mariano Rivera's career ERA is in fact lower than Craig Kimbrel's career ERA but by FIP, Kimbrel is still a better reliever. He's like kind of struggling by ERA with the Dodgers, but his like strikeout numbers and walk numbers are still great.
There you go. All right, let's dig into what's been going on around Major League Baseball in terms of the trade deadline. Our first domino sort of fell the other day when the Seattle Mariners jumped the market a little bit and picked up Luis Castillo from the Reds. What did you think of the haul that the Mariners gave up to get a starting pitcher with team control?
I think it's a good deal for both sides, honestly. Pardon me. The prospect haul was quite nice for the Reds. I have my own like personal views on particular prospects, like Noelvi Marte, who's the centerpiece going back to the Reds. He's a shortstop prospect and a top 20 prospect by MLB Pipeline. He strikes out quite a lot and doesn't provide a whole lot of power for a guy who's going to strike out that much. Obviously, he plays a premium position, so that's kind of helped a little bit because he's going to give you at least good defense at a premium position. Even if he's striking out a lot, you know, it's just like, to use a Toronto comp, he has like less power and about the same amount of whiffs as Bo Bichette. And Bo Bichette is a pretty frustrating player to watch at times. So he's kind of in that vein. And for the Mariners, Castillo is a great little pickup because, you know, this is a team trying to break a 2-decade-long postseason drought. And it looks like they're going to be able to do it. They're clearly the second best team in their division. They're angling for that wild card spot pretty hard. And with Castillo, it gives them a nice arm in probably like what they needed to address the most. Robbie Ray has not lived up to expectations particularly well. Marco Gonzalez has been terrible. So adding a potential like game one starter for any postseason series was pretty key for the Mariners. So like this puts them from wild card contender to a team that might have like a relatively deep postseason run. They still have some question marks around the diamond, but they're a good team.
The interesting part with the Mariners specifically in that starting rotation is I believe if the playoffs started today, they would be coming up to Toronto for a 3-game series. And that would mean Robbie Ray, unless his vaccination status has changed or something else changes in the world and the way the two countries work, like Robbie Ray wouldn't be able to pitch in that series up in Toronto. So going out and getting Castillo for them is also a way to like guarantee you have at least one high-end pitcher for a potential 3-game series against the Toronto Blue Jays, which does factor into things. We heard a lot of talk about vaccination status when the Yankees went out and got Andrew Benintendi, and there's talk that maybe he's changed his viewpoint on that as well. Sticking with the starting pitching market, though, there still are some intriguing options out there with Skubal out in Detroit. You got Montas and Pablo Lopez as well. If you view this Castillo deal as sort of the market being set for prospect capital and what you have to give up for a starting pitcher with team control, is it wise for the Jays to get in on the starting pitching market, or should they maybe save their bullets, so to speak, to get more bullpen help, maybe a left-handed bat? Like, how would you prioritize those things, I guess?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think they need a depth starter. I don't think they necessarily need to go out and get Frankie Montas. I think the Athletics now, like you said, because of the Castillo deal, have their market set. And they're looking for, you know, a package of prospects that includes a top 20 prospect. Unfortunately, the only top 20 prospect the Jays have right now is Gabriel Moreno, and you would not include Moreno, I don't think, in a deal for Frankie Montas. That's too high of a cost, in my opinion. Moreno is quite a bit better than Noelvi Marte, in my opinion. So there's that. I would prefer, I mean, if I were running the Jays, I would prioritize the bullpen, probably 2 or 3 arms, hopefully back there. And then a depth starter to complement Gausman and Manoah. Gausman, even though he's, you know, regressed a little bit, is still one of the best pitchers in baseball by FIP and WAR. So like, he's been amazing. And the head start he had over the first 2 months of the season over every other starting pitcher is almost insurmountable. He obviously needs to, you know, straighten out some command issues, but that's a fine 1-2 for any postseason bound team. Whether they go and get, you know, someone, you know, I keep playing with the idea that they go and get Martin Perez from the Rangers. Mm-hmm. It's like a really unsexy name, but he might be a fine, you know, number 4, number 5 for a postseason bound team. Also gives you the flexibility to put Yusei Kikuchi potentially in the bullpen where he might be more effective.
Yeah.
You know, there's lots of ways the Jays can play this.
Yeah, I keep kind of going back to like, I'm a big believer that you kind of make your big bets in the offseason over the winter, right? And the Jays, for the most part, made their bet. They made their bed, you could almost say, with Manoah, Gausman, and Berríos. Those are going to be your three main guys going into any playoff series, whether it's the wild card series, which is obviously only a best of three, or any sort of best of seven you could find yourself in. You know, those are your, that's who you're going to be running with. Those are the guys who are going to need to get you your wins in those series. And the thing that's going to help you go deeper, I don't even really view a left-handed bat as that kind of thing. Because again, if you beat a team in a best of seven series, it's going to be because Vlad and Bo and Springer and Gurriel and all your big guns, Chapman, Hernandez, all of them, those guys outperform the other team's top six hitters, not because you added a fringe depth piece, which I get can help. And if there's injuries and all that, but I still view bullpen, as you mentioned, you know, two or three arms. I think they should be going out and absolutely getting two or three strong arms, because that's an area where right now they're clearly weaker than a lot of teams. And that's an area that can have a huge impact on a playoff series. And I, again, I don't really understand the need. I agree with you. Like, you don't need to go give up Moreno to get some starting pitcher with team control, because you have three good arms that are under team control already. But there are a lot of people who will sit there and go, well, no, you need to be going all in every single season. And I just don't think it's smart to sit here and be like, yep, because we, you know, were in these top five of all these power rankings at the start of the year, we need to just completely blow up our prospect pool and go all in. Like, I would only do that if you're getting Soto or Ohtani, which brings me to my next question. And it surrounds Juan Soto. Is there a team out there that you think kind of makes the most sense for the national superstar?
I mean, I would love to see the Jays pay up to get him. I mentioned Bichette earlier in this, you know, hit with you. I would include Bichette in a package for Juan Soto, hands down. You know, potentially move Jordan Groshans immediately up to shortstop, or, you know, play Espinal there for now, whichever you like. But I mean, having Juan Soto in a corner outfield spot instead of Gurriel every day would be unbelievably great. Ohtani might be a better fit, because he gives you that, like, I mean, he's a great fit for literally every single team in baseball. But yeah, I would, if I were the Jays and I'm, you know, looking to give up Moreno, I'm, you know, I'm not that impressed with how he performed at the major league level, which, very small sample size. It's a lot to ask a catcher to do, to learn a whole pitching staff and deliver at the plate. But if I'm, you know, kind of out on Moreno, then I would hands down, like, include him in Soto Ohtani. But other than that, I'm not jumping at the chance to trade away my top prospects for this team, because I think the Jays are building something special. This isn't like the 2015, 2016 teams where, you know, there were aging veterans on the team. They needed to make a postseason push with that roster. This is a team that, you know, all of the stars are under team control for a while. They're young, and hopefully they're going to be retained for a long time. So yeah, buying high on Frankie Montas makes much less sense than, you know, selling everything for a Soto or an Ohtani, who potentially makes you a contender for, you know, for their current window of 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. And the other thing we've kind of been hearing through the rumor mill is that the Jays seem to be pretty conscious of not wanting to disrupt any sort of clubhouse chemistry, right? Like, there was talk like, hey, if you wanted to give up a Gurriel or a Hernandez, that gets you some significant pitching help and potentially multiple pieces as well in terms of a starter and maybe a relief arm. But it sounds like the Jays, you know, they recognize the value those two guys bring in the clubhouse as sort of, to use it, a cliche, quote unquote, glue guys. So I really don't think we're going to see any sort of like a massive splash. I think it'll be kind of like you said, a couple of relief arms, maybe a bench left-handed hitter that you have to just basically take on the money for or something like that. I don't think we're going to have our jaws hit the floor with any sort of move that the Jays do over the next 24 to 30 hours, however long till deadline. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's definitely true. I think if they make a big splash, it's probably for like a David Bednar type, the Pirates closer, who is not fully expected to even move, even though the Pirates are bad and don't need him. It seems like they're not in a rush to trade away their relievers, which, whatever, Pirates gonna pirate. But Yeah, like I tend to agree that the Jays will probably not be one of the deadline winners, if you will. They can still win the deadline, hands mm-hmm. down, but like they're not going to be perceived as a team that went out and, you know, really put themselves in a position to win the 2020 World Series or 2022 World Series over, you know, their opening odds, you know, when they were like favored in the American League to open the season.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. It will be, it's always very interesting to kind of use hindsight at the end of a playoff run and look back at the teams at the deadline who were the perceived winners and how, you know, a lot of the times they usually flame out, or the big reliever, the big starter you go get has an ERA of like 5.6 down the stretch or some shit like that. But Michael, really yeah. appreciate you giving me some time today, and enjoy deadline day.
My pleasure. Yeah. Thanks so much.
All right. Big shout out to Michael Bradburn for joining us today on the pod. Coombsy, let's wrap up with, well, actually I'll get your take on this. Do you think Soto is going to be dealt by the deadline? Do you think this actually gets done? I'm honestly stunned, because I really thought when all the smoke started coming, like, hey, it sounds like this is going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if, the Nats part ways with Soto. I thought it would have happened like a day or two before the deadline. I didn't think teams would want to, or the Nats, I should say, would want to put themselves in a position where it's like, you know, 2 hours till the deadline and they're like, shit, okay, which one of these offers is the best? And they're scrambling. I thought this would get done earlier. It's clearly not. I mean, unless it drops in like the 20 minutes between us stopping this and me uploading the podcast, which would just be a damn shame. But do you think Soto actually gets moved? And is there a team that you think kind of makes the most sense for him?
Yeah, that's entirely possible. I kind of just have this sneaking suspicion it's going to be the Yankees that pull the trigger on the trade. But I don't know if that actually makes that much sense, because, you know, this offseason's a weird one for them because they have to decide whether they're going to pull the trigger on that huge Aaron Judge contract. And if you do acquire Soto, you have to do the contract. So for the Yankees, I kind of had this weird feeling that it might be, all right, we're going to acquire Soto. He's going to become the new guy, and we're going to let Aaron Judge walk after this. Just because of the age differences, you'd probably rather pay Juan Soto than Judge, who's now in his 30s.
Yeah.
But that's a super difficult decision to make in the midst of the season the Yankees are having. But that being said, they are kind of going cold a bit recently. You said like a lot of teams in their last 10 games under 500, and the Yankees are one of those teams.
Yeah.
So you never know. But that's just what I've always thought. But that's just, you know, being an American League East brain and just assuming that's going to happen. I just kind of figure one of Otani, one of Soto is going to be, or one of the two of them is going to become a Yankee.
Yeah, yeah.
Feels inevitable.
It's weird how much chatter there is around the Cardinals and talk that they're facing a lot of pressure. And I wonder if they could get involved in this Soto thing with the Jays specifically. The one team, and I saw some people spitballing about this on Twitter, but there were the rumors, and they were legit rumors seemingly, that, you know, the Astros could be willing to part ways with the starting pitcher to get a catcher. And I kind of look at that and go, you know, if you're Toronto and you're like, okay, we believe in Gabe Moreno, does Danny Jansen get you an arm that's of any value? Is that something you'd consider pulling the trigger on? Do you do something even bigger? Like, would you move, you know, what do you have to give up to get like Christian Javier or something?
I just don't like making that move in the middle of the season. Like, I feel like the Jays, it's a good thing that they have this catching depth right now, because you have the three of them. But if you go down to only having two of them, say you trade Danny Jansen, like you said, to Houston for a good starting pitcher, or that's part of the trade, whatever, then it's Kirk and Moreno. Now, Kirk just last year missed like half of the season with a hip issue. What if then he gets injured and all of a sudden you're rolling with Gabe Moreno, who's a rookie, and Zach Collins as your two pitchers going down the stretch and into the playoffs? Like, I think you just keep the embarrassment of riches you have now and then deal with it in the offseason.
Yeah, I think that's smart play as well. We are going to do a special, or we're going to mix up the way we usually do the pod. Instead of doing one on Wednesday to recap the two-game set against the Tampa Bay Rays, tomorrow after the deadline, we're going to have a podcast with BK. We're going to bring him on and we're going to break down whatever the Jays do tomorrow. So that should drop. Probably we're going to drop that, I think, while the Jays are playing the Rays. We're going to record while the game is on, because I mean,
we just won't even acknowledge it. Who cares?
Yeah, who cares? Like, it's a two gamer against the Rays. It's at the Trop. It's going to be full of nonsense. The Jays are going to lose both games like 6-5 or 5-4 because of some bullshit. So it's just not even worth really getting into. So we are going to drop a new episode of the podcast tomorrow, actually. So back to back days with BJN Radio. But a two gamer in Tampa will do the standard hope for a split, right, Coombsy?
Yeah, it's going to be Gausman versus Rasmussen. The Jays always have a tough time with Rasmussen. He's quite good. And then it's Kikuchi versus TBA. But going back at their schedule, it should be Ryan Yarbrough. Yarbrough used to be really good against the Jays, but he's been pretty bad against the Jays recently. I think they probably figured it out because he tosses junk. So they should be able to hit him. I'd be happy with a split here because it's in Tampa. I'd rather just not watch it and just pretend it's not happening. So I'll probably just pay attention to Twitter and the trades and such. And just not watch the Jays play in the Trop. We'll just pretend it's not happening. Who cares?
Preach. And then it's a series in Minnesota after that, and then a series in Baltimore before returning home on Friday, August 12th. It'll be the next home date as they start a three-game weekend series against the Guardians, which I will be at, Coombsy. I will be in the building for all three of those baseball games, and I'm very excited.
Yeah? What are you most excited for?
Hot dogs, beer. Nice. Honestly, I just love, I get like, you know, we got the news about the renovations and all that, that they're going to be doing at Rogers. That. Yeah, I guess we missed that on our last pod. I saw some people being like, oh, it's putting lipstick on a pig, like blah, blah, blah. The stadium's still junk. And I don't buy that at all. Like for me, again, I'm someone who gets to go to, if I'm lucky, five or six Jays games a season in Toronto. I usually try to make two trips out there. But I love being there just because I'm stuck so many times watching it on TV that when you finally walk into the building, it's like, oh my God, yes, it's so great in real life. But I understand it's not really a ballpark. It's a stadium. I look at these renovations they're doing and I'm going, hey, they're actually putting in the money to turn this thing from a stadium into more of a ballpark. And I like it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't agree with the comment about lipsticks on a pig. Like, there's no doubt that the Rogers Center is one of the ugliest stadiums in baseball, if not the ugliest one. It might be. It's probably that and the Trop are the two shittiest ones. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's a lot of good stuff about it. Like, it's in a fantastic location. There is a really good vibe there. You know, when the roof's closed, it's kind of a unique, very hockey style atmosphere in there. And then when the roof's open, it's, you know, lakeshore pleasantness. It's, you know, nice, wet, cool air. It's, you know, it smells good, which you can't necessarily say for a lot of Toronto. And then, yeah, I mean, and that's the thing is you just kind of take that, you take what you have, and then you just jazz it up a bit and make it like, just make it a little bit more pleasant. That's all you can really do. They're not going to tear the whole thing down and rebuild it, right? So just like more bar areas to stand up, like more stuff like the flight deck, more areas to sit in a more comfortable chair, more variety for when you're like getting drinks or stuff to eat. I think they've done a pretty reasonably good job with that. So yeah, it might not be perfect. Like it'd be really cool if they could build kind of near BMO Field, like out in Ontario Place, if they could build a whole new stadium there. Yeah, that'd be sick, but it's just not happening. So, you know, it is what it is. Like, take what you can get. They made it slightly better. Works for me.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see what kind of phase one ends up bringing and the way they're going to rebuild the outfield and all of that stuff. Again, the people bitching, they could very easily not put $300 million into it and you'd just be stuck with the same old stadium. So I really didn't understand the people who wanted to like gripe about this. Like, it's going to be cool. It's whatever. It's going to make it a little bit more flashier. It's going to make it more like a ballpark, in my opinion. So I'm excited to see what they end up doing. Coombsy, you enjoy this. I guess, no, we're not even going to have a two-gamer. We'll talk tomorrow, I guess.
We'll chat tomorrow. We'll completely forget about this Rays series. It's just not happening. It's the second All-Star break. It's trade deadline break.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Shout out to our friends at PointsBet Canada as well. No word yet on if the Jays are dogs or favorites for their first game against Tampa Bay, but we will have that up on our socials when we find out. Enjoy the series. Don't enjoy the series. Enjoy the trade deadline. We'll chat again tomorrow night with BK.
Best wishes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts and delivered by DoorDash. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.